Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 12th of November. Today is the official publication date of The Second Chance Dog. It's a love story, and it's written by John Katz. And we're so happy to have him as our guest this hour. John has been with us many times before. He has written, this is amazing, 25 books, and they are tender books about life with his dogs, donkeys, chickens, other animals on Bedlam Farm in upstate New York. John has really talked with us about most of those books over the years, and at times you could hear a loneliness in his voice. Well, now Maria is on the farm. She's the woman who has been his wife for over 3 years. Frida is on the farm, who at one time was completely a one-woman dog, Maria's dog. John was in love with Maria. He had to win the heart of her dog, and he had to win Maria's heart as well. As he writes, this is, and it truly is, a story of happy endings, love, and second chances. It is the best of love stories. Other books of his include, I'm just listing a few, Dancing Dogs, Izzy and Lenore, The Dogs of Bedlam Farm, Rose in a Storm, and many others. And John's had a really interesting life. Before his farm life, he worked for CBS News, the Boston Globe, Washington Post, Philadelphia Inquirer. He's written for Rolling Stone, the New York Times, and the Wall Street Journal. And many of you are familiar with his work, so let me give you our phone number. You can join the conversation. Probably haven't had a chance to read this book yet, but you've read others. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. John, hello.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, John.
Wonderful to talk to you. Wonderful to talk to you.
Oh, it's wonderful to talk to you. And what a book this one is. It's such a love story, John.
Thank you. Thank you.
Isn't it?
It's about time, I think. It's wonderful to come out and say, I have a book that is filled with happy endings. No dogs die.
I know.
And, it's just nice. Very nice.
And you say,
you know, Kathleen, you were the first person when I was on your show a few years ago. I remember you emailed me and you said I didn't sound very happy.
Right.
I remember that, and you're the only person who ever said that to me, and I just remember that. I should pass that on.
Hmm. And I didn't realize until I read this book, which is very honest. You really open yourself so much, and I'm glad you did, but I didn't realize how unhappy you were, John. It's scary. It was scary for me to read it.
Well, it was a tough time. You know, there was within a month, the recession hit. I got divorced of a 35-year marriage. Mm. And publishing, as we knew it, disappeared. And so there were just a lot of things that hit me at once. And they brought up a lot of things I just had not been dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was a tough time. It definitely sent me into a rough place. And I was alone on the farm up there. And excuse me, I'm sorry. So, but I wanted to be honest about it. I thought it was really important that the part of the reason I wanted to write the book, and apart from the dog part, was also to make a point about being able to find love at any point in your life,
right?
Even when you're getting older. It was really important to me.
Yeah, it really is. It's such an inspirational story. And thank goodness Maria and Frida came into your life. Some of it just seems to be happenstance, doesn't it? I mean, she wasn't that far away on the farm, but the fact that you two met and that you wooed her, and you kept wooing her, sir. You were really something.
I was. I went after her. Well, you know, it's funny. These two, I call them Thelma and Louise. They were the Thelma and Louise of women and dogs. They were these two outcast man-haters who were bound together. And, you know, I was living in Hebron, New York at the time, which is a place, if you were looking to go to a place where you would never find anyone, you would go there, more cows than people there.
Mm.
And I loaned this woman my barn, because she was an artist who was trying to do her work. And I gave her use of my barn. And I really never saw her. When I first got to visit her, I was almost, you know, run out the door by this monster dog who was throwing herself at the door at me. She's a Rottweiler Shepherd mix, a very impressive big dog. And I knew right away, I did fall in love with Maria, and I also knew that if I didn't work it out with Frida, there was not going to be a Maria.
Right.
So I was intensely motivated.
Yeah. And you went to, it's really an interesting, the whole book is lovely, but you really had to find out who Frida was you, we'll get to Maria in a moment, but you found out who this dog was so that you could move forward with an understanding of her and also how to get her maybe not to fall in love with you, but to tolerate you. Not Maria, Frida, we're talking about.
Well, both of them.
Yeah.
Well, there was trust involved along the way because, you know, Maria, I think, was really looking to see how I would deal with Frida. I think that it would have been a real issue of trust. I think mm-hmm. she began trusting me. But I was lucky. You know, I have this blog, as you know, and the blog, I sometimes refer to it as my mother. The blog was where I began researching Frida's life. I was actually able to track down her life, which is an unusual thing to do with a dog like that.
Right.
Frida was a Rottweiler Shepherd mix. She had been purchased in the Adirondacks from a not very reputable breeder who brought her to Glens Falls, New York, where she worked as a junkyard dog. And they know how they train those dogs. They crank them up and arouse them by banging on the fences and frightening them and arousing them. And she was just crazed. Then she got loose and got pregnant. And he took her up the New York State Thruway and dumped her out in the Adirondacks. Where she lived for years, probably 3 or 4 years, near as I can tell. Hmm. And she made her way down south to the town of Queensbury, and a community college was there, and the kids sort of left food out for her and knew about her. And the SPCA spent a year trying to catch her. And if you know Frida, you know that's not an easy thing. And she defied all of their tricks and figured everything out. And then they finally drugged a stake, and that got her. Then she spent a year almost in the SPCA shelter where all kinds of sane people came in there and decided not to adopt her until Maria walked in the door and said, oh, she's adorable. I'll take her. And they said, okay, just take her. She didn't have to fill out any forms. Mm-hmm. They didn't ask if she had a fence. It's like, just you take her. So she took her, and Maria always thought Frida was adorable. They still adore each other, and brought her home. But Maria also had to hide her from the world because she was so crazy.
Right.
And this is a dog who had hunted, you know, in the wild for years in very rough terrain. So her prey drive, she was really cranked up. And she did not like men, which is one of the things that attracted her to Maria and one of the things they shared. So it was really, for me, I have to say, you know, you've read my books. You know, I have had really nice dogs generally.
Right. Love
Kemper
dogs.
Breeders.
Yeah.
And border collies and labs. Right. And I have avoided this kind of a dog my whole life because I don't like to have dogs that scare people.
Mm-hmm.
And also I thought it was just beyond me to train a wild creature like this.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two powerful breeds. But I was really motivated, and I really got into it. I really saw that Frida had a great heart. And we brought her to the farm, and she could not be near the dogs. She tried to kill the donkeys. She tried to kill the chickens. She went after the sheep. She was terrible with my other dogs. So we had to put her in the barn for a year and ferry firewood out to her at night to keep the wood stove going. So I undertook this year-long training campaign to turn her around. It was quite an experience, I have to say.
And her thank you to you was pretty heartfelt. You write this: thank you so much for trying to work it out with Frida. I can't bear to think what I would do if you weren't trying so hard to do that.
Maria, yes. Well, I think, you know, Maria at the time, and I think a lot of women relate to this idea, just sort of had it with men, really, I guess mm-hmm. is the best way to put it. And was looking to be independent. It wasn't really looking to move into the farm or get married or settle down. She wanted, you know, just wasn't sure. And I think it was a real eye opener to her that I really cared enough to work with Frida. It really became, you know, it sounds strange to say this, but you and I have talked about this. I sometimes think some dogs just appear in your life for a reason.
Right.
And I always felt that the reason Frida had appeared in my life was to challenge me in this basic way to be more patient, to be more loving, and also to show the better side of me.
Mm-hmm.
And to help me come together with Maria. You know, I really felt this was the person for me. And I believe in second chances. You know, I really believe, you know, when you get older, you know, I was 61 at the time. I remember a therapist telling me, well, you know, I've never seen anyone undertake so much change. And he said, well, what do you want in your life? And I said, I want love in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And he just sort of laughed. He said, well, you know, that's hard to do at your age. And it really got to me, you know, and older people just have no role models in our culture. You know, we have just vanished from magazines and television and books, and we don't see ourselves in the mirror anywhere because we don't have a lot of buying power left. So marketers don't like us. And right. And so you have to create your own role of yourself. And I remember saying to this therapist, I'm not going to die like this. I'm not going to die in a loveless way.
Mm-hmm.
And so the dog was a symbol of that to me, that was a good place to start.
Well, the other thing that was striking to me, John, because we know each other, and I know Maria, and I'm so glad the two of you found each other, but there was my image of you is this highly accomplished writer. You're really a poetic, beautiful writer who have all these followers all over the country. You make this very profound connection with people. And then I realized more reading this book than others that you would go to all these book signing events, and at one point, women are trying to, you know, go to the back to the farm with you with their dogs, which was really, I loved reading all of that. But you went back to this really isolated life, and you were on the edge. You know, you weren't very well at times, and things were falling apart, and yet you don't see that because you had this whole other life, you know, that you were highly acclaimed.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, I was really not coming to terms with it myself. So I think what mm-hmm. I was doing was hiding up there. You know, mm-hmm. that was the farm was a fort. It was a great place to hide. You know, I was not really conscious of my marriage disintegrating. You know, I thought my wife at the time was going to come up there, even though there was really no chance of that. And I was hiding. I think I had given up on this idea. When I got divorced, that's really when the mask, as Joseph Campbell would say, that's when the mask came off.
Mm-hmm.
And I just cracked up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at the time, Maria, I'd hired Maria in exchange for giving her the use of my barn. She would come and help with the animals. And I remember sitting there just counting the hours until Maria came.
Mm-hmm.
She'd come on Saturday morning. She'd stay for 10 minutes. And I would basically give her a cup of tea, and then she'd leave. Because we were both married to other people, really, and we weren't able to see each other. And that's when I started taking pictures, which came right out of that relationship. Because when I took pictures and put them up on my blog, you know, she would call me as an artist and tell me what she thought of them. And so I realized I needed to take pictures all the time. So all of my pictures were love letters to her, really.
Mm.
And she would call me every night at 6:30 and talk about the pictures. And so we were very bound in this way in a creative connection, and it was quite bizarre because, you know, there just weren't many people around there.
Right.
You know, it was really a remote place, but we just became soulmates that way. And then when we both were divorced, we started seeing each other, and it was a very, very powerful experience. I began to open up, and I really began to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And Frieda was there in the middle of that. You know, because she was just this presence, this kind of out-of-control presence that just had to be dealt with. And I ask myself all the time, okay, I've been writing about dogs for years. I love dogs. I think about them. So what am I made of here? You know, can I deal with this dog or not? And time to put my serious training shoes on and get to work.
Right. And what's interesting is you began to heal, and she, what a big thing this was in her life, became an artist again.
She became, you know, watching Maria unfold has just been the joy of my life.
Hmm.
She was so quiet. I thought she was mute when I first met her. She was really shut down. She was a passionate artist who hadn't done her art in years, had no place to do it and no encouragement to do it. And so the minute she started coming to the barn, and I didn't see her for a long time, she would come in the middle of the night and leave, you know, in the morning. I would leave food there like a cat, and the food would be gone in the morning. I had a weakness for food, chocolates and
oh,
cheese.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I left a lot of chocolates in there, and they'd be gone. But we didn't see a lot of each other. And now, you know, she has her own blog, and she sells everything she makes on her website.
Hmm.
It's just not quiet at all anymore, as mm-hmm. I have learned when I step out of line. I get taken down fast. So that's been a great thing. You know, I think encouragement is one of the most powerful things in the whole spectrum of emotions.
How true.
And she just needed encouragement, as I did.
Right.
And so she brought out the artist in me. I really began to open up in a lot of ways, and I decided it was time, you know, it was past time to deal with the stuff I had been sort of hiding.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I did the work, you know, I did therapy and spiritual work and really went to work on myself. And I was just determined not to end my life like that, you know, and it became a real strong thing with me.
Yeah, I think that's very important, this encouragement. We realize that when we think about teachers who are important in our lives or people who are near and dear to us, they've encouraged us in some way. It's sort of a rare commodity, don't you think, John?
It's a very rare commodity, and I think it's fuel for people. I think people, you know, this is one of the huge things I've learned later in life, that how desperately important it is to encourage people. You know, it's like I feel now, you know, I've started to do some teaching.
Oh, you have?
I've started to teach people how to do blogs, and I'm teaching short stories at a little art center here, and I'm loving that. And it's like I feel like it's like taking a wand to people and touching them and watching this magic fairy dust come down. When you say to them, you know, you're gifted, you can do it. You know, you're worthwhile. You have a story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Your work is important. You know, Maria needed that quite a bit. And I needed it, too. I mean, for all the books and things, I wouldn't have been such a mess if I had really believed it.
And Frida needed it maybe, too, huh?
Frida. Well, what can I say about Frida, the hell dog?
She's going to a book signing tonight.
She's going to a book
signing. Wow, that says a lot.
It's going to be interesting. The bookstore owner is a little nervous. I've got pictures of people flying out into the street, but I'm sure she'll be fine. You know, Frida is a great-hearted animal. She is... the challenge of dealing with a dog like Frida was just immense, and I think I started to do some real serious research about dogs like that, and we looked very closely at issues like prey drive, which few people understand that all dogs have prey drive. All dogs are descended from wolves, and the higher ends of the prey drive has been bred out of dogs like border collies and labs and golden retrievers. You know, they'll chase and they'll hunt, but they don't bite and kill. The Rottweiler Shepherds have a lot of prey drive because they're working dogs and herding dogs and hunting dogs. And a dog like Frida, who first was trained as a junkyard guard dog and then lived in the wild, just had this runaway prey drive that had never been curbed. And so she was just a hunter and would lose control of herself. I was very touched and influenced by the writings of Annie Sullivan, who taught Helen Keller.
Yes.
Who wrote about this idea that obedience is the gateway to education. And I realized this is what Frida had never had. She just had never had this to pay attention to anybody. You know, Maria never trained her. She just basically protected her.
Mm-hmm.
And Frida protected Maria. So there was, you know, you get the dog you need. You've heard me say that.
Right.
So I began dealing with this in a very clinical kind of way. I started what I call the beef jerky campaign, where I would go to the barn and throw some beef jerky in and then run and just get out in time. And this went on for months. But I knew that being a dog, if you throw beef jerky at a dog every day, sooner or later they're going to think you're not so bad.
Right.
And that's what happened. And so I was able to get closer to her, and I would try to put a leash on her, and she would take my arm in her mouth and hold it. And I would think to myself, okay, I'm doing this for Maria. I'm doing this for Maria. And I was also projecting to her something I think she understood, not in words, but in feeling. I would look at her and I'd say, Frida, we have to work this out. This has got to work out. We got to work this out. You know, we both love the same woman. We got to work this out. And I think she got that feeling from me. I really do, because after maybe 6 months, she let me put a collar on her. And the real breakthrough, ironically, I have to be honest with you, I was taking her out for a walk, and she would pull the leash and take off after things, and mm-hmm. she was big. And I kicked her. I wasn't meaning to kick her. I was just kicked her to stop her from pulling me into the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And she turned and looked at me, shocked. She's just shocked. Like, oh, my God, I have to pay attention to him now. And then that was the window. I never had to do that again. I never did that again. But she started paying attention to me, and I was able to start training her.
Mm-hmm.
Doing obedience and calming training. And my goal was to get her into the house by Christmas Eve as a present for Maria.
We welcome phone calls for John. John has a new book. It has just been published today. And it is The Second Chance Dog, A Love Story. And indeed, it is a love story on all kinds of fronts. John is now married to Maria. They've been married about 3 years, and this book is about the dog who was her really protect her for quite some time, who kept her from having to deal with just about anybody because her dog wouldn't let her deal with anybody, and she didn't want to either. Maria's an artist, and John, by encouraging Maria, has allowed her to become a full-fledged artist. And Maria has allowed John, you can hear it in his voice today, can't you, become doing different things with his life, teaching and become a perhaps more confident man who's got significant love in his life now, which he didn't have. So at any rate, that's what we're doing. We're talking about love. We're talking about love this hour of the show. Here's how you reach us. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. You can send an email if you would like. That's talk@wpr.org. Or you can leave a message on our Facebook page, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number is 800-486-8655. John Katz is our guest. And every time I interview him, I say, oh, this is my favorite book. But there's something, this is really a love story. And there's nothing like a really good love story, human being and dog love story. Second Chance Dog is the name of it, a love story just published today. Liz in Madison, your first caller, John. Hi, Liz.
Hi, John Katz. I can't tell you how many hours of pleasure your books have given me over the years. And I live vicariously through you because I would love to have a little farm just like you have. Unfortunately, I can't. But I just want to thank you so much for all of the many books that you've written about your dogs on Bedlam Farm, and just to thank you. And I have to say that I actually talked with you on the radio a few years ago, and I can tell so much the difference in your voice mm-hmm. and the way you talk, that you are truly in love and truly have just are just enjoying your life so much more than you were a few years ago. And I'm just so very happy for you.
Well, thank you, Liz. That's a beautiful, beautiful message. I really appreciate that. Thank you. And, you know, you can follow the farm on my blog, too.
How is Rose doing, by the way?
Rose died a couple of years ago, sorry to tell you.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize that.
It's okay.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's right. You know, you can follow the farm on my blog, bedlamfarm.com, and you can keep up with there's an exciting cast of characters here.
Oh, so I can keep living vicariously through your
absolutely.
Blog. That's wonderful. Yeah. I'd love to
absolutely.
Do that.
Okay. Absolutely.
Bedlam Farm.
Thank you so much. I so
thank
much
you, Beth.
Appreciate
I appreciate that very much.
Thank you. Well, what does that mean to you? I know that you know on some deep level that your work has touched so many people. I mean, you're a prolific writer. 25 books is nothing to sneeze at, John. It's
no,
a lot of books.
I'm getting older, that's all.
Well, you've given a great body of work, too. What kind of connection do you think about that, the connection that you have with people like Liz and people all over who are reading what you're writing? It's
I have no awareness of that.
Really?
I have no awareness. I just don't. I mean, I'm honest. I'm not being ingenuous. Huh. I love to hear it. It's wonderful. I don't think about it. My blog, as you know, has been 7 or 8 years old. Now it's about 170, 80,000 people a
goodness.
Month on it. And it's become a hugely important centerpiece of my creative life, my photography, my writing. It's becoming like a living memoir for me.
Mm-hmm.
And people, I do meet people all the time who say, oh, my God, you've meant a lot to me. I just have no sense of it. It's not something I think about. I guess it scares me a bit, probably,
mm-hmm.
because I don't think, I've been struggling myself to get my life together. Don't think of myself as a person with answers for anybody. But I do see when I hear messages like that, that it has an impact on people, and that's very nice to hear. I just don't have a sense of it myself.
Right. Well, that's
I don't think about it, and I think when I work, I think, I just love the work. I love my writing. You know, I saw this naturopath recently, a doctor who had left medicine because he wanted to be a little more holistic, and he asked this big questionnaire, and the last question for me was, do you love anything about your life? And I said, well, I love everything about my life. You know, I love my wife. I love the farm. I love my work. I love my pictures. I love the animals. I love my friends. And he said, well, great, you're healthy. I just wanted to kiss him, you know. There you go. You know, that's what it's about. And so that's where I stay focused. I think if you think too much about how people are receiving it, you know, that kind of can get into your head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't have a consciousness about it.
Yeah. Taylor in Dubuque. Hi. Taylor, hello.
Oh, hello. I'm sorry. I missed you saying my name there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And my question for your guest was if Mr. Katz could possibly expand on the idea of calming training. I do canine behavioral coaching, and I'm very interested in that concept. What kind of techniques that you use to do that?
Sure. Well, I've been doing calming training for years, you know, long before Frida, although it certainly came in handy with Frida. Calming training is really, you know, dogs know how to do everything but nothing. And I think people tend to crank them up and arouse them and make them crazy. You have breeds like Labs and Retrievers and Border Collies, and everybody tells me how crazy their dogs are. You know, and I don't have crazy dogs like that. I work very hard at what I call a series of grounding trainings, commands. I've written about this. It's really basic obedience, maybe 10, 15 times a day for just a couple of minutes until the dog really centers down. It means being very calm in the house. I have no toys or balls or games in the house. I don't wrestle with them. You know, when I'm working in the house, I don't want to know there are any dogs in the house. I'm really very quiet. But it's mostly, and Frida was a great chance for me to do it. When you start working a dog through these rote, very simple lie down, you know, lie down is the position in which dogs are calm. And if you have a dog lie down and stay, you know, you're halfway there. And most people don't have a dog that will do that. It just takes a lot of patience, and it's really, the training is focused not on just exercising them and not on obedience, but in doing things that are calming to them, working with them, reinforcing them, praising them, giving them food. It doesn't take that long. If you do it for a couple of months, dogs internalize it. And I've been successful with this with every dog I've ever had, especially with Frida, who had never had any kind of training and was just kind of running amok in the world. And dogs don't want to run amok in the world. They really don't. I think they're happiest when they're connected to people and when you're having pleasure with them and you can walk with them safely. I think our mission is to show dogs how to live safely in our world, which is basically hostile to them, and to stop doing a lot of the things dogs like to do. So calming training for me, you know, and I write about it in the book actually quite a bit, is really what saved me and Frida. Because once I got her attention, I was able to show her how to just not, she didn't have to chase everything on the earth. She didn't have to fight with the other dogs. She didn't have to try to kill the donkeys. She could just relax and wait till she was told to do something. And that's the way it sort of turned out.
You know, it was striking to me, that whole journey you took with her to find her roots and the fact that, and tell us this story of how Frida really was a heroic dog and saved people's lives, and how the people in the neighboring farm from where Frida had been a watchdog had a completely different picture of this dog. And Frida was happy to see them, and they didn't worry about her at all.
No, it was a very powerful thing. And Frida's a dog, if you approach her, when I met her, she would throw herself right at the door to try to keep everybody away, growling and snarling.
Yeah.
Big dog, very intimidating. Through the blog, I got this email from this woman who said, you know, that I saw a picture of your dog, Frida. That was my dog. And she told me the story of how her husband, who had died, had taken her up and abandoned her because she was pregnant, and how she had been trained. So I took Frida to meet her. And she told me this story of how Frida had been in the fence and had barked and raised the neighborhood one night. And there was a house on fire right next door. And the whole family just got out because Frida had awakened them. And I was just shocked to hear this story. And she said the boy in the house, a young man, had come up to Frida while she was guarding the fence, and he would give her food. Hmm. He would sneak in at night when her husband wasn't looking, because nobody was supposed to do that. And he would pass food through the fence, which she had apparently would take. And he was one of the boys in the house that was saved. And so I went down, we met this woman who felt very bad about what had happened to Frida. Frida would have nothing to do with her. She wouldn't go near her, wouldn't look at her. And I walked down the street, and this boy pulls up on a bicycle, I tell the story in the book. And he jumps off the bicycle, and he just throws himself onto Frida, and she goes over on her back, and they're just hugging each other.
Oh.
And I was like, I almost had a heart attack. I thought, oh, my God, she's going to kill him.
Oh, my.
And she totally recognized him, and his mother, too, who came running out. And the two of them, it was like she was a pussycat.
Mm-hmm.
And they just remembered each other. She remembered him those years back. With all that she had been through, she remembered how kind he was. Now, who knows what motives a dog has? You know, who knows? But you seeing that scene, I was just floored.
Right.
And it also, I could see into the heart of the dog, too.
Yeah, right,
you know,
right.
This was a dog who wasn't looking to cause trouble. So, you know, it was, and I think also my, you know, I recount in the book this dream I had when I was trying to get Frida into the house, where I was in the Adirondacks with her, and I was walking through the woods, and she was waiting for me through this clearing. And I said to her, what do I have to do to get you to calm down into the house? You know, I was stuck. And I heard this voice say, trust me. And I said, okay, that's the one thing I hadn't really done, is to trust her. So on Christmas Eve, when Maria was at work, I just walked her across the road, opened the door, walked her into the farmhouse. And there, the other dogs, you know, Rose and Izzy and all, they're waiting for her, you know, growls a big standoff. And I was holding my breath, thinking this is either going to be a really bad idea or a good idea. But I just decided to do it. And Frida looked over at the wood stove and just went over and laid down. And she's been in the house ever since. And when Maria came home that day, she just burst into tears.
Oh,
she was shocked
to see
Frida in the house.
Mm-hmm.
I said to Frida, I got the girl.
And so you did. Thanks, Taylor, for the call. Number is 800-486-8655. John Katz is our guest. His latest book is The Second Chance Dog, A Love Story. Joanne in West Allis, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for this show. I called because I had to put my dog down yesterday, and he was the opposite of Frida. He loved everybody, and I loved him dearly.
I'm sorry.
I've read so many of your books, Mr. Katz, and I was wondering if there's any one that you would recommend to read now.
Well, I'm sorry. I hear the sadness in your voice. I wrote a book 2 years ago called Going Home, Finding Peace When Pets Die. That might be helpful for you. It's out in paperback. It's called Going Home, and I think it's been helpful.
I probably have it, and I'll read it again. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Feel better.
I worked as a hospice nurse, and he brought so much joy to so many people. And thank you for the show.
Yeah, thanks, Joanne.
I hope you get another dog, too.
Yeah. And I love your descriptions of, you've written some beautiful, beautiful passages of your dogs working in hospice, John. It's been a meaningful thing for you to do as well.
I do, and I have a new hospice dog. I have a Red from Ireland.
Yes.
So he's working with the veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah. Isn't it remarkable what dogs can do? I mean, it just dumbfounds me at times.
It's remarkable how people react to them.
Yes.
It always amazes me how people who are closed up and angry and wounded, they just trust dogs and open up to them.
Mm-hmm.
Very healing thing. You just stand back and watch it, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's a good thing to do with our animals. Thanks, Joanne.
I love it. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's hard. My animals die, and I'm a wreck for a long time. I cry and cry. I want to spend just a moment before we go back to phone calls, because the other big part of this book, you know, is this love story, which is terrific. And you've got this list. I think you should just put this up on your blog so that everybody can see it. Of all the things, I love this list, John, your list of all you're going to do to be a partner and a wonderful partner to Maria and to show how much you love her. I mean, this list is great. I like this list. Isn't this good?
Work, too. It's work.
I'll bet it's work. But how many people think about doing all these things? Can you talk a little bit about it? What have you decided to do for her, to show her that?
I remember one of the things that really awakened me. And, you know, I felt very bad about my divorce. I was married to a good, very good person, a very good woman. We just drifted apart and in different ways. And I just didn't ever want that to happen again. And I remember I was at a supermarket, and near here. You know, this is a small country. This is country life. I bought an Asian pear for Maria, and the cashier said to me, "Oh, you never bought an Asian pear before. They're expensive." I said, "Well, I'm buying it for my girlfriend." And she said, "Oh, for your girlfriend." And then the woman next to me said, "He's buying an Asian pear for his girlfriend. Isn't that nice?" Suddenly there were five women around me, and they were all congratulating me and saying they wish their husbands would buy them Asian pear. I'm thinking to myself, this is like a $2 Asian pear. This is not like a big deal. And they all said to me something I never forgot. One of the women, the cashier, just went up to me, and she gave me a big hug, and she said, "Listen," she said, "it's the little things. Don't ever forget the little things.
Right.
If you remember that, you will have a really happy marriage, you know, relationship."
Mm.
And I did remember that. And I went back, in fact, later, after I got married, and gave her some flowers to thank her for that message. So I think this one of the things I do every day is to encourage her and remind her that she's doing great and she's really doing what she wants and she's doing it well. And I do always think of little things to give her, to bring her, small things that just show her that I'm thinking about her.
Mm-hmm.
And she does the same for me, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's those small bits of encouragement and also making sure to listen and making sure to talk and making sure if there's any trouble that we talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, I would say, a series of small things to not forget it and slip into that sort of state of taking somebody for granted or forgetting that people need encouragement every day.
Right.
You know, I think every day it's hard to be an artist. It's hard to be a writer. It's hard to be a radio person. You know, you need to be told and reminded that you're doing something worthwhile and not forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the biggest thing was the small things for me to never forget them. And that was a very valuable lesson. I found that as I was dating Maria, women would talk to me about their relationships, and they were, many of them were saying the same thing. They just sort of felt neglected, and they just wanted to have some attention paid to what they were doing. This surprised me. I just didn't have a perspective on that.
Mm-hmm.
But it made a deep impression on me that not to take those things for granted. And I can't emphasize, you know, you mentioned it before, people need encouragement. It's fuel for people. They just need to have it.
Right. And one of those pears every now and then isn't bad either, right?
I do. I do still do the Asian pears. I never forgot them.
I've never had one of those. What do they taste
like? They're not bad. They're like juicy and crisp. They're not bad. I try them.
Okay. We're going to welcome more phone calls. John Katz is our guest this hour. His book is The Second Chance Dog, A Love Story. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And we have a picture on our Facebook page of John and Maria and Frida, which is a really nice picture of each of them. So that's the Kathleen Dent Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls for John Katz. Andy in Oconomowoc. Hi. Andy, are you there?
Oh, hello.
Hi, Andy.
Hi, I'm sorry. So I do have a question for John, but I'm considering adopting a blind German Shepherd, and it's quite aggressive, it's young, and would he have any recommendations and perhaps a book that would fit this situation?
Well, I think you should probably talk, I'm not really a dog trainer, I think you probably need to talk to a trainer. You know, I'm always reluctant to give advice to people who I don't know, and I don't know the dog. So, you know, I think you should get some, if you're concerned, whenever you see a dog as being aggressive, it's something to be careful about, just because, you know, the dog can get in trouble, people get in trouble. I've been through it.
Yes, you have.
Living with a dog who hurt people and ended up euthanizing him. And
mm-hmm.
Don't want to go through that again. But I think it's a training question, really, and I think you probably just need to get to talk to a vet and get some, a trainer in to look at the dog and maybe guide you better than I could.
And how do you make, I know that you've gone to breeders and you, considering the nature of what you do, and you really want love dogs and working dogs as well, but how do you choose a love dog, John?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's for many, many people in the country, getting a dog has become a sort of moral affirmation. A lot of people are into the idea of rescuing a dog, and that's a great way to get a dog. You know, Frida's a rescue dog. I've had rescue dogs. At the same time, it's not the only way to get a dog. I think if you need to get a certain kind of dog, and I need to do that for many reasons, I need to do it for my work. I need to do it because I bring my dogs places. I need to do it because I write about them. And I love to work with them. I mean, I've always had working dogs. And I have had great luck going to really good breeders who have been breeding dogs a long time and know the line and know the genetics. For me, that's the best way to get a dog. You know, and I have rescue donkeys and rescue sheep and rescue everything. But Lenore, the love dog we're talking about, came from a breeder. And I said to her, look, I need a dog I can take to schools. I can be with kids. I can take to bookstores. There's almost no way to guarantee a temperament of a dog unless you go to a really good breeder. It doesn't mean you can't get a great dog elsewhere. You can get a great dog at a shelter. You can get a great dog from a rescue group. But I don't like this idea Americans have now that there's only one way to get a dog. Best way to get a dog is to get the dog you want and need and will work out for you. So when you're entering in an area where you're getting a dog who you know is aggressive and has problems, you really better know what you're doing, you're going to get sued if there's trouble. Mm-hmm. The dog's going to get put down, or somebody's going to get hurt. Your dog bites in America are up 47%.
Oh, my goodness, really?
And the Center for Disease Control tracks them. It's an epidemic. And there's billions of dollars being paid out in lawsuits for dog bites. It's not taken lightly the way it used to be. So if your dog bites somebody, you know, you could lose your insurance and the dog could lose his life. And it's just something to be cautious about.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not getting a dog from a good breeder, you're just not really sure what has happened to the dog.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're careful, a good rescue group, a good shelter group will help you be careful about it. But it's something to be thoughtful about, because I think the best way to get a dog is to get the dog that really works for you and your life and your family, and that works for the dog. And it's something I think is getting lost in the rush to see dogs as being abused and mistreated, and that's the only way to get them.
Right. Thanks, Andy. Bill in Sturgeon Bay. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say hi to John. I've enjoyed immensely all your books and stories and tales, and I'm not an email computer-type guy, and I was just hoping at some point in my life, before I get too old, I'd be able to at least say thank you very much. You and I are pretty much at the same age, so I think just knowing what I know about you and you know nothing about me, I think we're pretty much brothers from different mothers.
That's great.
I have the same feelings that you
hey,
have.
Hey, brother.
Some of you express so concisely that it's like I wrote these myself, John. I just want to thank you.
Mm. Well, thank you, bro. I appreciate
that
very much.
Just fantastic. I haven't read I'm looking forward to the new one. The newest one for me that I haven't read and I just picked up a couple of days ago to, I don't want to say a used bookstore, was Rose in the Storm, and I'm enjoying that as much as all the other ones. But thank you so much, and please keep up the great work.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Bill. Thomas in Menominee. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I heard about the calming training. Now, I have a dog who I love very much. She's about 8 years old now, and she, you know, tends to get a little jittery. Especially around louder noises, but it seems to carry on past that. And, I mean, there's nothing around here for her to be scared of. But, I mean, you know, I've tried different things like treats, you know, like milk bones, buffalo strips, pepperoni, bacon bits, bacon strips, popcorn, vitamins, rawhide, jerky, and dental treats.
Oh, my gosh.
But,
my goodness.
Nothing seems
you need to
work.
Open a pet store.
Yeah, really. All right, what will work, John?
Well, you're talking about noises. You know, dogs are complicated. There's so many things that can upset them. It could be trouble in the litter. There can be issues in the breeding. There can be genetic issues. You know, I don't know that food is necessarily going to help with noise. You know, I think dogs have traditions and habits. You know, you'd have to really get the dog looked at by somebody who knew the dog, a vet or somebody, to see if there was a medical issue. Sometimes dogs have hearing issues that make them hypersensitive, or they have neurological issues that might make them hypersensitive to things, or they just might be damaged in breeding. Yeah. You know, again, it's hard to say that over a great distance. I don't know that that just necessarily different kinds of food will treat that. The way most people deal with noise issues is to, you know, is to acclimate the dog by exposing them to noise at low levels and then raising it. But that's tricky. That's very tricky to do. It takes a long time. And sometimes if the dog is bothered, if it's not hurting anything, you just have to let it go. Mm-hmm. But again, I would think if you have a problem like that, someone needs to look at the dog, just make sure there's not some obvious medical issue. I've even heard of dogs with thyroid conditions who are hypersensitive to noise.
Hmm. Thank you, Thomas, very much
for the
call.
Thank you, Tim. Good luck with it.
I was amazed to learn you had dogs when you were a child, but holy Toledo, what a different experience those dogs had with their lives. I was really amazed to read all of that, John.
Well, we had a dog, I think of my father, who had a German Shepherd named King. He loved the dog. And think of that dog's life. He let the dog out in the morning, and he let the dog in the evening.
Hmm.
The dog slept in the basement. He never saw a vet. He would routinely terrorize the mailman and the milkman, come home with their pants in his leg.
Hmm.
And this was how people had dogs. You know, he never saw a vet in his life. He eventually was hit by a car and killed, which is often the fate of dogs then. They ran loose. They bothered people's garbage. And my father considers himself a great dog lover. He did not walk around Providence picking with a plastic bag, picking up poop, I'll tell you that.
Right.
So look at dogs, the lives of dogs now. They've moved right to the center of our emotional lives.
Mm-hmm. They sure have.
You know, we spend a lot of money on them. We spend a lot of health care on them. They mean an enormous amount to us emotionally. And I think the emotionalizing of dogs has become a real issue for them and for people. It's something I always work hard to guard against and be wary of. You know, you can love a dog too much. And it shows up in things like overfeeding and behavioral problems and the catastrophe of dog training right now. So it's very important. I mean, one of the things that really helped with Frida was remembering always that she was an animal. You know, she was not an errant child. She was an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And I treated her like an animal. And by treating her like an animal, I was actually able to communicate with her through food and through clarity and through attention. And that was, I think, saved her life and helped me too.
Yeah. Don in Rice Lake, hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. And I
thank
appreciate
you,
it so much what John does with dogs. I had a 200-pound newt, and I had to put him down a few years ago, but I had an experience when John was talking about you got to learn to trust your dog, and I think a lot of people don't do that, and also you got to listen to what or try to figure out what the dog's trying to tell you. I had an experience where we were walking down a trail in the woods here that I have, and all of a sudden, Max turned around and just kind of pushed at me. And I couldn't figure out what the heck he was doing. And I ignored it, and I kept going a little bit. Well, he kept turning around and pushing at me. So finally, here I looked up, and there was a bear coming out on the trail.
Huh.
And I realized this dog is trying to get me, you know, to go back, to get away from there. So I kept walking backwards. I didn't know what was going to happen. And at the same time, he kind of walked sideways, watching the bear and watching me. Well, nothing ever happened from it, but I thought it was a neat experience that his dog was trying to tell me something.
Yeah.
It was an amazing experience.
Yeah.
That's a great, great story. And I think it's very important, Don, because, you know, I think I really make a big issue about listening to animals. You know, people are always telling you what their dogs are thinking. But, you know, they're alien creatures. They don't have language. They don't have words. We don't know what they're thinking. We don't really have a language for them. So one of the things I've really done in my work, and on the farm especially, is to just be listening. I've learned this with the donkeys, who are incredibly intuitive creatures, but especially with the dogs. I think, you know, if we pay attention to them and we watch them, they're often signaling us about things. They have extraordinary instincts about how we're feeling and what's going on and what's around. And I think we're so busy thinking we know what they're thinking, we often fail to stop and listen to them. And I think they have a lot to teach us. I was writing today on my blog about centering and about how this is an intense week for me. You know, I gave a TED Talk in New York.
We have 10 seconds. Sorry.
Okay, and so I listen to dogs, and they're showing me how to center.
Mm.
That's one of the things I'm learning from them.
Mm. John, thank you so much. Thanks for writing this book. It's just lovely. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's great as always.
John Katz, the book is The Second Chance Dog, A Love Story, and it has just been published. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and KP Whaley and Robin Cherry for helping out with this program. Thanks for all of your calls. Everybody will be with you tomorrow with two really good hours. Great conversations coming up.